we get things underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program from Boston Sports Journal our friend Sean McAdam. Hello there, Sean.
Mitch, how are you? Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk with you. Are you at the ballpark?
I am. Yep. And I can tell you that the cold front that has swept through central Maine has not yet arrived here. So send it our way, would you please?
Is it a little steamy there at Friendly Fenway?
It is. It is indeed. It's we're going on four straight now of temps during the day being in the mid-90s and game time temperature at 7:10, usually registering in the high 80s. So it's, as we like to say, a scorcher.
Yes, indeed. Well, game two of the series with Houston tonight. What is it with these Astros?
Yeah, there's something in the water because the Astros have been the nemesis of the Red Sox so far this year. 3 out of 4 at Minute Maid last week and limiting them to 4 runs in those 3 losses. And then right back at it last night, just 1 run off Framber Valdez, and they beat up Martin Perez pretty good. And so it's 4 out of 5 so far, and it's kind of taking you back to like 2017 or so, and the Astros just have the Red Sox number. I think some of it is a really good pitching plan and keeping to that. For the most part, they've been fairly competitive games, although last night was not one of those. So just one of those things, the way they're matching up, relatively small sample size, and 2 more opportunities for the Red Sox tonight and tomorrow to turn that around.
Well, Nate Eovaldi on the mound tonight, and he has been, I think, everything the Red Sox could have hoped for so far this season.
Yeah, this is kind of the guy they hoped they were getting when they extended him or re-signed him after the 2018 season. You know, a guy with elite velocity, a wide pitch mix, to keep hitters off balance. And of course, as it is so often the case with guys in the big league, it's a matter of health. And Eovaldi has had difficulty staying on the mound throughout his career. He's had 2 Tommy John surgeries. He's been on the DL or IL at some point in each of the last, I think, 6 straight seasons, including every season until this one, since he's been in Boston. So, you know, this is kind of the guy that they gave 4 years and $68 million to, and it's just taken a little while to get there.
Well, one of the things that has been a challenge for the Red Sox throughout this season that has been such a pleasant surprise has been their inability to generate any consistency out of the leadoff spot. Kike Hernandez didn't get the job done. Christian Arroyo a couple of nights ago did great, reaching base, I think, 3 times, but he took an 0-for-3 last night. What are the other solutions that are out there for Alex Cora?
Well, it seems to me that the most logical is to move Alex Verdugo up into that spot where he occupied most of last year. Like almost everybody else that's been given a crack at this the last 2 or 3 years, he's not crazy about it. If you remember, Andrew Benintendi didn't like it, did it reluctantly. Mookie Betts was fine with it and quite good at it, as you might recall. Alex Cora seems unwilling or uninterested in breaking up that 2 through 5, which is when everyone's in the lineup and 100% is Verdugo, Martinez, Bogarts, and Devers in that order. He likes the left, right, left that provides, and he really doesn't want to mess with that. I guess in one sense, you know, this team has scored 300 runs. I think that's either 3rd or 4th in Major League Baseball, and they've done it, you know, getting next to nothing, as you referenced, out of that leadoff spot, which I guess begs the question, how important is it to have a good leadoff hitter? We've always had the supposition that you needed that. You needed somebody to regularly get on base and kind of kickstart the offense. But without that, the Red Sox have been plenty good enough offensively. So they continue to fish around for somebody that seems like they can fit and do it on a regular basis. But until then, it's kind of mix and match, and depending on who's pitching for the other team and the availability of some other guys, are kind of just patching and filling. And as I said, whether we expected it or not, it really hasn't cost them through 61 games.
Well, whether Arroyo can get the job done there or not, he's another one of those guys who has been such a pleasant surprise for the team. He is just he gets it done defensively, offensively. He laid down a beautiful and rare sacrifice bunt the other night. I love the way he plays.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a reminder that this guy was once a first-round pick. You know, he didn't come out of nowhere. What he has had to overcome is a lot of injuries and kind of bad timing, which isn't to say that he's necessarily been able to light it up every opportunity he's been given, but, you know, he's bounced around. He's been with the Giants, the Rays, the Indians, and now the Red Sox, so this is his fourth organization, and after a while, I think a guy tends to get a reputation. Oh, four teams, never really an everyday guy. He's a journeyman. But he once was thought to have first-round talent, and because of some nagging injuries and some circumstances, he hasn't been able to stay on the field long enough to show that. This year has been, you know, even though he's had an IL stint with the bruised hand and then missed some time the first time that happened, he's been relatively healthy and has shown what he's capable of doing. And I'm kind of interested to see what they can get out of him on a full-time basis if he can stay healthy.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. J.D. Martinez back in the lineup, had a hit last night. Is that wrist pretty much 100%?
Yeah, it seems to be. You know, they tend to err on the side of caution with these nagging injuries. It happened Friday night, sliding headfirst in second base at Yankee Stadium, and then he got three nights off in a row, or three games off in a row, the last two in New York, and then the makeup game here with Miami, he was out. But the fact that he swung the bat pretty well last night seems to indicate that, you know, he's better, and the fact that he is out in left field tonight rather than in his customary DH spot would seem to amplify that, but it's not something they have to monitor too carefully.
The bullpen has been so good throughout the season. Matt Barnes, of course, has just elevated his game, but now all of a sudden getting better work from Adam Ottavino. Sawamura has had some terrific outings, and I thought Brandon Workman looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, I think the one thing with Workman that concerns you, but maybe it's part of the package and always will be, is the amount of walks.
Mm.
Even when he was so dominant in 2019 and then for parts of 2020, you know, you look at the numbers at the end of the year, and I think he had, you know, an opposing batting average of something like 150 against, and yet his whip was kind of one. And certainly most relievers would die to have that. To limit an average of one base runner per inning, but it was because his walk rate was so high. And, you know, unless you're having the kind of year in 2019 where hitters are batting, you know, .130 off you, then you're asking for trouble when you're putting, you know, 4.5 base runners on per nine innings via the walk. And, you know, that's one thing that's popped up here. He walked two the other night in Yankee Stadium and couldn't finish up the inning. They had to bring Barnes in for that save on one of the nights. And even though he gave them two scoreless innings last night, he had another two or three walks. So that's something that they've got to continue to work with him. But I'd say, you know, for the first week back, he's been pretty good. And as you noted, Rich, you know, they've now got enough guys to step in and be that bridge to get them to Barnes, whether it's Ottavino, who has kind of overcome a rough first 2 weeks of the season and has been excellent for the last 7 weeks or so. Sawamura, you figured there would be an adjustment period there with a guy just kind of getting accustomed to pitching here in North America, different baseball, different mound, different culture, the whole bit. That split can be very nasty, and he throws it so hard. I mean, you know, you see it and you think maybe it's a two-seam fastball because it's 90-91, but it's got great movement to it at the bottom of the zone, and it's clear that's a pitch that hitters are going to chase. So, yeah, it's a deep bullpen, and it's anchored by you know, Matt Barnes throwing the ball as well as he has, I think, over the course of his career.
Now, if I add any gray hairs, it may happen when Phillips Valdez comes in to pitch. At times looks good. He had the nice save against the Yankees. Something about his delivery, he always looks to me like a guy who was playing left field and it's a blowout, and so they say, can you come in and give us an inning?
Yeah, it is kind of a strange, it's a strange delivery, and it's a strange pitch mix, because at a time when most relievers come out throwing 98 and gas, more than 60% of his pitches are changeup. Mm. So, you know, it's kind of a nice contrast when he's able to command it, because guys are so geared up to hit that plus fastball with everybody else that facing, you know, changeups that are in the high 70s or low 80s really can throw them off a little bit. But you have to be able to command it to have it be effective. And when he's off, you get the walks like you get with Workman.
A good sign yesterday was a workout by Chris Sale, 25 pitches. Apparently all went well. What's the timeline for his return?
It's going to be a while. I thought it was instructive, as I wrote today, that you know, Alex Cora, you know, relying on Dave Bush and the athletic trainers that are monitoring Sale more closely than he is, because that's their area of expertise. He said, you know, what does this mean? Where is he? And they said, this is a bullpen in January.
Mm.
Let's do the math. You know, if you're where you are normally in January, it means you haven't really begun spring training. Now, maybe I'm taking them a little too literally on that estimation, but you know, he's going to have to go out on a rehab assignment, and it's going to take some while to build up the arm strength, build up the pitch count to the point where he's ready to go, you know, 85, 90, 95 pitches anyway. At this point, I would be shocked if we saw him before August, and I think even that might be generous. You know, it's taking longer, and that doesn't mean that the elbow is barking or that the surgery wasn't successful. Everybody's got a very different timeline with this thing. We've already seen Noah Syndergaard start early and begin a rehab assignment down in low A for the Mets, and he had to shut it down for a while because he felt something in the elbow. So the last thing they want to have, is some sort of roadblock like that. So they're erring on the side of caution. I understand that. I think that probably the fact that the team is performing as well as it is allows for that kind of careful approach. So we'll see. But, you know, doing the math, I've got to figure that we're looking at more than a month and a half of ramp up here before he's ready. It's one thing to throw a bullpen of 25 pitches, and it's another to start having, you know, live BP sessions and then graduate to a rehab assignment in wherever it is, Greenville, Salem, Portland, Worcester. Short answer, it's going to be a while.
And for Jaron Duran, who's hitting very well for Worcester, and the Red Sox real struggles with trying to find somebody who can play center field every day, has his timeline changed?
No, I think they still want, you know, again, they're being deliberate with him. I think, you know, you'll hear general managers and player development people say that they want to wait to bring him up when they know when they bring him up, he can stay. You know, they don't want to have him. You saw what happened with Kelenic, the top prospect with the Mariners, who, you know, went 0 for 35 or whatever it is, and get sent back to AAA, and who knows what that does to his confidence. He knows what it does to his development and growth as a player. And while you're correct that they aren't getting a lot of offense out of center field, whether it's Kike Hernandez or Danny Santana, whoever's out there, again, offense is not a real critical area of this team where, you know, well, we've got to add something because we're not scoring enough runs. That's not the case here. I think you add in the fact that Duran is playing his first, maybe his second full season as a pro outfielder. Of course, didn't have a season to play last year, was at the alternate site, and also made some significant changes to his swing at that alternate site to get a little more lift, to be able to drive the ball more and be not just a, you know, hit the ball on the ground and try to beat it out with his speed. He now, as the numbers suggest, has a swing that can, you know, drive the ball for extra bases and at times out of the ballpark, but even that has been battle-tested only for a little more than a month at AAA competition. So both in terms of learning routes and polishing outfield instincts and getting that swing completely comfortable and second nature, I think he's a post-All-Star break addition here, but not before.
Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal. Sean, as always, appreciate you checking in with us this afternoon. You stay cool there tonight at Fenway if you can, and we'll check in with you again soon.
Look forward to it, Rich. Thanks.
Thank you. Sean McAdam on Downtown.